There are times when following in someone's footsteps requires us to fill very big shoes. That was true for Joshua, who took charge of Israel after the legendary Moses had stopped just short of ushering God's people into the Promised Land. Most of us will not be called to direct an entire nation, but in our own spheres of influence, we can all demonstrate courageous leadership. The title of our new four-part series at Northgate, Joshua's story will help us consider the integrity, strength, and reliance on God required to lead our lives and influence others. Let's take a listen.
We're starting a new series. Speaking of starting, we finished up Esther last weekend, and we're moving into a series out of the book of Joshua called Courageous Leadership. And I want to jump right into that, and I want my iPad not to do whatever it's doing right now. Okay, there we go. So I was thinking about getting a job offer. Like, I didn't get one. Like, I have this one. I like this one. But it's kind of an interesting time, isn't it? There's a lot of emotions that go on when you get a job offer. There's several things that happen. It's usually exciting, I think, you know, when you have a job offer and you're excited about the possibility and what the future can mean, and you know, oh, should I do this? Should I do that? There's a lot of excitement that goes with it. I think being affirmed is a really natural part of that. It's usually very affirming when a company, you know, especially if there's a lot of people, there's a big process, and they come out and they say, we think that you are the person for this job. That's very affirming to hear and to feel. And a lot of times, a job offer can be intimidating. You know, you get that and you think, okay, well, they think I'm the right person for this job, but am I the right person for this job? Will I be able to do it? Should I do it? Is it worth making the move? You know, there's always that unknown factor there where it can be kind of an intimidating thing. It can be especially intimidating depending on the person that you're following. So if you apply for a job and you're following somebody that was really well-loved or that did a great job, you know, it can be really intimidating for that. And I was telling Pastor Marcia about this, and she agreed. Like, she felt like she really could identify with that of the exciting and the affirming, but also the intimidating. And Pastor Marcia has done a wonderful job in her role in her job. And, you know, we love Pastor Greg, but she's done a great job of not only filling that position, but also making it her own and bringing a different angle there. I said to Vern, when we interviewed Marcia, I said, we don't have one of her. Like, as far as personality, like, she is, and so it's great. There's been so many times where I'm like, this is uniquely Marcia, and none of us were going to do that. Somebody else, I was thinking about another situation with that. Jim Kelly retired in 1996, which is now a long time ago. Like, I think in 96, it's like 8 years ago. It turns out it's like 22, I think. I'm not great with math. And Jim Kelly retired, and the Bills had groomed a successor at quarterback. They drafted him. He'd been there with Jim. He's ready to, like, slide in and take over and keep the Bills going in the same direction, right? Does anybody remember that successor's name? Yes, thank you. No one could get it last night, which I thought was a really bad sign, right? That no one even remembers Todd Collins' name. He was a Michigan Wolverine. And Todd Collins didn't do that well, which is why you don't really, most people don't remember his name. And since then, take a guess at how many starting quarterbacks the Bills have had since Todd Collins. 50's high. What was it? 5 is low. 17. 17 starting quarter. And speaking of 17, Jordan, happy 17th birthday, right? That was good. All right. 17 other starting quarterbacks since then. So I was thinking, you know, if you add that up and now you have, you got two quarterbacks this year, right? McCarron and Allen, that would be 19 and 20. 20 feels like a good number to finally hit on the successor to Jim Kelly. You can only hope that the Patriots have as much trouble replacing Tom Brady. So Joshua, who's the main character in this book, he had the unenviable task of following a legend. He had to follow Moses, and Moses was the man. Moses was actually a lot like Jim Kelly because he took the Israelites out of this slavery, out of this bondage, this really terrible time, out of the wilderness, and he brought them just to the edge of the Promised Land, but he couldn't bring them in to the Promised Land. So there's a lot of Jim Kelly-Moses parallels going on there. But Moses, he led the Israelites out of slavery, right? He had this vibrant personal relationship with God. He had led the people well for 40 years. But that chapter came to an end, and it was time for someone else to lead the people. And as we'll see, that person was going to be Joshua. And that's why the title for this first week, looking at chapter 1, is Accept the Job. Joshua had to accept the job. If you want to be a courageous leader, that is the first step. And I think this is not what the message is about, but it's an appropriate title and an appropriate concept for Memorial Day weekend, as we have this time to remember and reflect on the men and women that not only accepted the job of protecting our nation, but did that and lost their life in the service of that job. And we honor them and we celebrate them and we remember them. But a little bit about what the book of Joshua is about. It's a book of history. It gives these very detailed historical accounts of events, a lot of battles. If you like violence, this would be a good book for you. Also, don't admit that out loud. It's likely but not definitely written by Joshua, but we know it was written by someone with firsthand knowledge. If it wasn't Joshua, it was someone else that was there because of the detailed, very vivid nature of this book. But most of all, the thing I want you to hear most of all about this book is it is a book about fulfillment. Because God had promised this land, this territory from the river of Egypt to the Euphrates, all the way to the Mediterranean. He had promised this land to his people. Does anyone remember what they called that land? The Promised Land. Man, you guys are sharper than Saturday night. Don't tell them I said that. But so you got Todd Collins and Promised Land. That blew them away last night. They had no ideas. This promise was first made from God to Abraham in Genesis 15. God said, I'm going to give this land to you and to your people. And then God reaffirmed that. He confirmed that to Abraham's son Isaac in Genesis 26. And then again to Isaac's son Jacob in Genesis 28. And so the book of Joshua is actually about the fulfillment of that promise. After 400 years of slavery in Egypt, after 40 years of wandering in the desert, the Israelites are finally going to enter into the promised land. And that's what this book is all about. And in that context, it is about their leader, Joshua, who courageously led them into this land. And I hope that over the course of this series, it'll help you gain biblical insight on what we all can do to be courageous leaders like Joshua in the situations that God has given us. So here's our main point this morning, and you'll see where this comes from as we go on. Be strong and courageous and step into the role that God has given you. Be strong and courageous and step into that. Because see, already some of you, when we start talking about leadership, you approach it how some people do when we have a message on marriage. Sometimes we come out and we're like, we're talking about marriage. And people are like, well, I'm single, so I guess I'll just, you know, mess around on my phone. Don't mess around on your phone. Because one of my big problems about talking about leadership is how many people don't see themselves as leaders. How many people think, oh yeah, no, I know leaders, right? My boss is a leader. My mom is a leader. I had a coach who was a leader. Hopefully, you know, a pastor who was a leader, or maybe two or three. But when we talk about leadership, I want to talk about you. I want to talk about you as a leader, you in your job, you as a high school student or a college student, you as a parent, as somebody in your home. You are and you can be a leader. I don't say this often because I don't want you to think I don't highly value my position here, but this is not my primary leadership responsibility. This is my secondary one. I only have two. I have two things I try and take really, really seriously. But my primary leadership responsibility is in my own home. And I've found some crazy things. You know, I've found mornings can be tough, right? In with kids, mornings can be tough. Woo, all right, everyone's like, they're too tired to raise their hand except for Pastor Dan. Everybody else is just like nodded slowly and was like, yeah, yeah. I've found that I can be a leader in my house, that I can get up early and I can spend time doing my devotions and I can have worship music going and that I can be a leader of how the mood in our house is that morning, that makes a very big difference. It's a way I can be a leader long before I ever get to Batavia or I get to Northgate. Now, sometimes I do get pushback on that. Just last week, my youngest daughter, Emerson, who's three, she's like, why do we always listen to church music every morning? I was like, well, I like to set the tone for the day. And she folds her arms. She goes, well, I want to listen to Greatest Showman, not Anthony. And I was like, I'm going to tell him that. I was like, I'm going to use that in a message and tell everybody. But you have leadership responsibilities, regardless of what your title is. Far too often, we assume that leadership goes with a certain position or a certain title. But that's not leadership. If you put someone that lacks quality leadership skills and abilities in a position like that, you will see just very quickly how much more leadership is than just what's on your business card. Because being a leader is about having influence. That's being a leader. It's having influence and impact on the people around you. And you have that, even if you are unaware of it. You are impacting and influencing people around you. Some of you were leaders in your house this morning. There are people here that got up and said, we are going to church today, right? And you and your family or your friends or whoever you came with, you are here. Maybe you just were a leader for yourself and you brought yourself. They are here because you did that. Because, right, sometimes you get up and you're like, I don't know. Like, some of you are like, well, the weather's too nice. We can't go to church. Or the weather's not good enough to go to church. But people got up and they're like, we're going to church. It's Memorial Day weekend. We're going to be there. So you are a leader and you have influence. So the question becomes, if we have influence, how are we going to use that influence? How are we going to work to grow and develop as leaders so that we can do the absolute most with what God has given us in this situation he has put us? And that is true for every one of us, right? There's a lot of people in this room, but this is true for every one of us. God has given us skills. God has given us experiences. God has given us characteristics. And then he has put us in particular situations, not by accident, so that we can have an impact. That is true for every single one of us here. And just a real quick plug, because I care a lot about this. We host the Global Leadership Summit here through Willow Creek. It's a great two-day conference just packed with quality leadership information. People inside the church world, people in the business world. There's a bunch of information right through these doors in between the women's room and the cafe. There's a table there, or you can go to northgatefmc.com/summit. We have more information. But I'm telling you, if you want to invest in yourself as a leader, we will come together and spend 2 days just trying to become better leaders so we can have more influence where God has put us. So we all need to accept the role that God has given us. And we need to accept the call to be an influencer and an impactor where we are. Because I think if we could sit down with Joshua and we could be like, hey, Joshua, do you feel like you're the right guy to follow Moses? You know, do you feel like that you're qualified to do that? I think he'd be like, no way, man. Like, I'm no Moses, that's for sure. You know, he would have that kind of take, but God didn't really give him a choice. We're going to see that in Joshua 1. He stepped into the role that God called him into. So we're going to start in Joshua 1. We're going to do the whole chapter this morning. Now, I don't normally do it. You can read it right on the screen. There's a Northgate app, as long as I know you're not screwing around. You can use that. We have these things. It's called paper, and there's printed Bibles under a bunch of the seats. You can use that as well. But follow along with us, because we're going to go through the whole chapter starting at verse 1. It says, after the death of Moses, the servant of the Lord said to Joshua, son of Nun, Moses' aide, Moses, my servant, is dead. Now then, which I love, I just love that. Real, like God is like kind of cold in that moment. He's like, Moses is dead. So anyway, here's what we're going to do. And he keeps moving on. He said, you and all these people, get ready to cross the Jordan River into the land I'm about to give to them, to the Israelites. I will give you every place where you set your foot, as I promised Moses. Your territory will extend from the desert to Lebanon and from the great river, the Euphrates, all the Hittite country to the Mediterranean Sea in the west. No one will be able to stand against you all the days of your life. As I was with Moses, so I will be with you. I will never leave you nor forsake you. Be strong and courageous because you will lead these people to inherit the land I swore to their ancestors to give them. Now, I'm very fond of saying that life is lived in chapters. That's always how I view things, right? There are some chapters, there's some different eras of life. There's things you say, okay, you know, we had this chapter, we have that chapter. And God kind of presents this here with Joshua. God says, okay, Moses died, but I didn't. I didn't die. He said, I'm going to be with you just like I was with him. I won't walk away from you. I won't leave you hanging, Joshua. So be strong and courageous because the promise that I made to the people is about to be fulfilled with you at the helm. I want you to see that this chapter of your life doesn't conclude God's entire story. This particular chapter doesn't include God's entire story. And that should be so encouraging to us. Because if you've gone through a difficult death or loss of a loved one, if you've gone through a painful job loss, if you've gone through the end of a marriage, if you've gone through the end of a dream that you had that you thought was going to happen and it didn't, God says the same thing to you this morning. God says that chapter may be over, but fortunately for you, my plan and my power carry over to the next chapter. So that may have ended, but I did not end. So be strong and courageous because I'm with you. I want you to hear that today because sometimes we go through those losses, the end of chapters, and we think, well, that was it, right? That was the best time. That was how it was. And it's never going to be as good. It's never going to be the same. And that's not what God says. He said, that's true, that's over, but my plan and my power will carry on with you. We had the Genesis Conference annual conference this year. It's a double conference. And so we had that Thursday and Friday, and Pierce hosts it. Pierce's college over by, or the church over by Roberts Wesleyan College. And it's always a really interesting, bittersweet kind of thing for me to go back there, because I worked there starting when I was 19 until I was 26. And so that was like a decent, at that point in my life, there was a third of my life that I had been there. And so there's a lot of great memories. I met my wife there. You know, there's a ton of good things. But I was thinking about this in the chapters, and I was thinking about that chapter. And I remember going through and being there, and I had, at a certain point, I was 25. The next youngest pastor on staff was 40. I felt like, man, I've got the world like lined up for me, and everyone's like, oh, you're going to do this, you're going to do that, you got all these things. And then a bunch of stuff there fell apart, and I lost that job. And I remember this distinctive feeling of being like, well, you know, that's the end of God, how God's going to use me. I had the initial thought, because I'm, you know, usually pretty self-confident, of like, churches are going to line up to hire me. They didn't, actually. There was no churches in the line, right? And then I started going to them, and they're like, no, that's cool. And so I remember thinking like, man, God had this great plan, right? God was going to use me. God was going to do all these things. And then that chapter ended, and I thought, well, that ended too. God's plan ended. God's power in my life was over. I had no idea what he had in front of me, what he had for me farther down the road. But I've learned, and I wish I could go back and tell 26-year-old me, God's plan and his power does not end just because this chapter has ended. So know the same thing. Know that a chapter in your life ending does not conclude God's story. Moses dying, it was a crushing blow to the Israelites. He had been a great leader, but because of God's power and God's plan, their best days were still ahead of them. And the fulfillment of God's promise to them as a people was still ahead. So God continues in verse 7. He gives Joshua some more encouragement here. He says, be strong and very courageous. Be careful to obey all the law my servant Moses gave you. Do not turn from it to the right or to the left, that you may be successful wherever you go. Keep this book of the law always on your lips. Meditate on it day and night so that you may be careful to do everything written in it. Then you will be prosperous and successful. And then verse 9 is our suggested memory verse. Have I not commanded you? Be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid. Do not be discouraged, for the Lord your God will be with you wherever you go. God has this very subtle theme through here for Joshua about being strong and courageous, right? He just say, hey, by the way, be strong and courageous. Be strong and courageous. He tells him again, be very strong and courageous. But he also tells him, if you want to do this well, if you want to take this seriously, in addition to being strong and courageous, Joshua, follow the right path. Don't turn to the right. Don't turn to the left. When you do that, you'll be successful. And that kind of echoes in Proverbs 4, 25 to 27. It talks about keeping our eyes straight ahead and fixing our gaze directly in front of us and making level paths for our feet and not swerving to the right and to the left. And all that tells us that we have to move forward with integrity. We need to move forward with integrity. And the stakes are really high here. Aren't they? The stakes are high for Joshua. He has to lead people well. They're relying on him to do that. Now, none of us are leading an entire nation, but the stakes are high for us too. The stakes are high in your job. The stakes are high in your family. The stakes are high in your life. And if you think that you can swerve to the right or to the left and it won't impact the people that you're called to lead, you're wrong, because our ability to lead begins with our integrity. That's where it starts. It begins with our integrity. And there's a couple really clear reasons why. One, I think it begins with our integrity because God is constantly looking for people, for men and women of integrity that he can partner with to bring about his purposes on this earth. But I think on a less spiritual and more practical level, for number two, people love to follow someone who leads with integrity. People love to follow those kind of leaders. I hope that you've had an opportunity to work with, to play on the team of, to follow a leader of great integrity. Those are the people that you get behind, that you jump in with, that you serve with, that you love to work with. But on the other hand, when you see those cracks in a leader's life, when you see somebody that's turning to the right or to the left, they're cheating on things, they're cutting corners, they're choosing the easy way out, you kind of put your guard up, don't you? You back up and you're like, I don't know that this is somebody I want to invest with. I don't know that this is someone I want to jump in on with this project. So we have to cultivate and we have to protect our integrity and understand that won't just happen on its own. And what I think is really cool is that God actually gives us the primary answer of how to do that in his instructions to Joshua, of what we just read. He says, keep the book of the law in front of you. That's the word of God that they had at that point. He says, make God's word what you talk about. Make God's word what you think about. And then I love he adds that, oh, and actually do what it says. Actually do what it says. And he says, if you do that, then you're going to be prosperous and you're going to be successful. And wherever you are leading, this is true for you. Wherever you're leading, it's true for you. You will be a better teacher if you spend time in God's word, if you keep it on your mind, and if you do what it says, especially these like last 3 weeks, right? All the teachers, you know, you got to do that. You got to make it through there. You will be a better boss if you do that. You will be a better employee if you do that. You will be a better parent. You will be a better leader in your house. Anytime, maybe this isn't true for you, but I'll say it for myself. Anytime I find myself being more impatient than normal, more angry than normal, less unable to deal with people in the way that I normally could, anytime that happens, I can always trace it back to a lack of time spent in God's word. I can just run that back and see how I've been doing there. I'm like, that's the problem right there. Because my ability to lead and your ability to lead begins with our integrity. So then in verses 10 and 11, Joshua turns to the people. God's given him the words. Joshua's going to turn and he orders the officers of the people, go through the camp and tell the people, get your provisions ready. 3 days from now, you will cross the Jordan here to go in and take possession of the land the Lord your God is giving you for your own. So he says, God's giving us this land. This land is as good as ours. God had promised it and now it's time. But also, let's get our provisions ready and let's get ready to move. Because God will be with us, but he expects us to move forward in faith. God doesn't just expect us to sit there and just let these things pour in, right? He says, I'm with you. This is yours. You know you've got this, but move forward in faith. Faith isn't faith when we know exactly how things are going to turn out. Right? Faith isn't faith when we say, okay, I've got everything lined up and then I'm going to jump. Now, I'm not encouraging recklessness, but I am endorsing boldness. And I, you know, Ninth Grade has been one of the best chapters of our lives. I mean, undoubtedly the best chapter of our marriage. And we've, you know, we came with one daughter. We have three now. It's been a great ministry season. I mean, it seems because Ninth Grade is such a great church that it must have been a super easy decision to come here. But at the time, I was in a church that loved me and my family so well, and Northgate was only able to offer, I think it was 15 hours a week when I started, so it felt like this big jump of like, wow, you're going to go down to part-time to be in this awesome church, and maybe this will happen and that will happen. Now, if I could have looked forward 7+ years and seen the role that I have and see what I'm doing, it would have been easy, right? But at that point, I didn't have all that information. There had to be a step taken there where we felt like God wanted us to come to Northgate. I still remember we met with the A-team in meeting room one, and then later that night, Mark Logan called and officially offered the position. I remember going through and saying, all right, this feels like a big step of faith to do that, and God has been so faithful and so good to us in this time here. But faith comes one step at a time. So take that step. Do what you can do today to move that forward. One of the most beneficial conversations I had a lot of beneficial conversations with a guy named Barry Smith, who was a vice president at Roberts and became a mentor and a friend to me and really helped me through in a lot of ways. But one particular day, I remember we were talking about, well, where do you want to be in 5 years? And I think people do that, right? We had that conversation and I told him some stuff. Then he said, what can you do today that gets you closer to those things? What can you do today? I actually walked out of his office to the other side, not like in the middle of the meeting, when the meeting was over, to the other side of campus, and I got the Master's of Divinity application at the seminary and began to fill it out. Now, I did have to finish the application, get accepted, and get the degree. Like, that was a lot of extra work for that thing. But I walked out of his office saying, okay, you know what? I have this idea. I think, you know, I'm called to be a pastor. What do I need to do today that gets me closer to that goal? So what do you need to do today? Let me ask you this way. I like to ask people this question sometimes, and I don't want to like spoil my playbook in case I ever have to ask you this. But when somebody's in a tough situation, I'll ask them, what would someone in your current circumstances do if they were completely confident that God was with them? Let me ask you that. Think through that. Whatever decision stuff you have, whatever leadership thing, whatever step you're questioning if you should take, what would someone in your current circumstances do if they were completely confident that God was with them? Because I think that's what you need to do. I think that's the step that you need to take. And God will be with you, but he expects you to move forward. Joshua, the Israelites, they were confident that God was with them. And so they got their provisions ready, and they moved forward boldly in faith, trusting in God. Then in verses 12 to 15, we have this interesting little side note here. Joshua says to the Reubenites, the Gadites, and the half-tribe of Manasseh, remember the command that Moses, the servant of the Lord, gave you after he said, the Lord your God will give you rest by giving you this land. Your wives, your children, and your livestock may stay in the land that Moses gave you east of the Jordan, but all your fighting men ready for battle must cross over ahead of your fellow Israelites. You are to help them until the Lord gives them rest, as he has done for you, and until they too have taken possession of the land the Lord your God is giving them. After that, you may go back and occupy your own land, which Moses, the servant of the Lord, gave you east of the Jordan toward the sunrise. So it's this interesting thing because some of the tribes are going to be staying in the land where they currently are, right? They're there, they're going to cross over, they're going to fight, God's going to give them this land. But some of the people, this was going to be home where they already were, east of the Jordan. But he says, guys, don't forget what Moses told you. Don't forget that we are all in this together. You can leave the women, the children, the animals here, but the fighting men, you guys need to get ready, and you need to come over and cross and fight with the rest of us. You are here to help them. Until the Lord gives them what you have, you have to take up this fight with us. And then after that, you can come back, settle down, and get rest here. Courageous leadership requires us to fight for others, not just for ourselves. I love that idea that he says, when they have what you have, then you can rest. It's not enough that just you have it. Many of us become very good at standing up for ourselves, at fighting for ourselves. But as Pastor Vern asked you last week through the story of Esther, do we use our voice? Do we use our position? Do we use our influence to fight for others? Because if you want to be a courageous leader, that's what you have to do. It can become way too easy for us just to settle down in our own bubble. And if everything is good in my world, then everything is good. But that's not what God has called us to do. God has called us to be passionate, to fight for others, to fight for others to have what we have. Now, you can't be in every fight. You can't carry that burden. You'll be exhausted. But what burden is God asking you to call? What has he called you to say, you need to fight for them? Even though you have it, you need to fight for them. I'll tell you, one of those things that really landed in my heart was seeing the impact that these international childcare ministry sponsorships have in Gahanda. Not just on one kid, not just on their family, but what every sponsorship does for the school and for the village. And I walked out of there being like, we've only sponsored 10% of this village and we already are just completely turning it around. And that was something that God put on my heart. Now, if I just say, well, my kids have plenty of food, right? I mean, we got a freezer and a refrigerator and a pantry and another freezer and another pantry downstairs. My kids are well fed, so why does it matter? No, that's not what God has called us to. God has said, until the children of Gahanda have enough food, until you have that, then you can rest. When they have that, when they have what you have. Courageous leadership requires us to fight for others and not just for ourselves. And then the chapter ends, verses 16 to 18, with the people's response to Joshua. God has talked to Joshua, and then Joshua turns to the people and says, this is what we're going to do, and this is what they say back to him. Whatever you have commanded us, we will do. Wherever you send us, we will go. Just as we fully obeyed Moses, so we will obey you. Only may the Lord your God be with you as he was with Moses. Whoever rebels against your word and does not obey it, whatever you command them, will be put to death. Only be strong and courageous. And I love this response of the people. I mean, it's a little violent that they're like, we'll kill anybody that disagrees with you, just so you know, man, we got your back, right? But it's a beautiful endorsement of Joshua's leadership, where they say, God has made you our leader, and we are with you, and we will follow you, and we will serve you just like we served Moses. And then they echo the words of God to Joshua, and they say, as our leader, go, be strong and courageous. I want you to know that when you see a leader courageously following God with integrity, go with them. Go with them. Follow them. Tell them that. Say, we are with you. Be strong. Be courageous. May God empower you to lead, and we are following behind you. Because those are the kind of people that you want to hitch your wagon to. Those are the people, the leaders you want to surround yourself with. These are the kind of people that you want to be around. Leaders of integrity. People that are courageously following God. People that have accepted the job to lead where God has put them. To leverage our influence. To make an impact in our homes. To make an impact in our jobs. An impact in our communities. In our church. And around the world.